AV, thank you so much for talking to me about your fantastic new pamphlets from Ignition Press called Snack. I wondered if we could begin by talking a little bit about, I guess, sort of the title, in the sense that the title suggests food, hunger, appetite, which indeed feature throughout the pamphlet in various poems. Could you talk a little bit about the role that those ideas play out in the pamphlet?
I think food is one of those things that I sort of always find myself writing about, whether I like it or not. It's one of those sort of recurring themes that we all have that kind of comes up again and again for me. And I guess it's because it's sort of, I think it's a really like interesting nexus for, on the one hand, like the body and the kind of private sphere, like the family. The meal is such a sort of a family thing, and food is in a way so like cultural and so personal. And then on the other hand, it's sort of, I think, intersects in really like complex, interesting ways with consumer capitalism and like economic factors, political factors, like sort of patriarchal policing of bodies. And in particular, I think the snack industry is a really interesting case in that way, because it's so, it's such a sort of late stage capitalism thing, this kind of mass marketing of snacks particularly, and they're often marketed like to women, but then also the sort of are then like codified as like, snacking is bad, or kind of you shouldn't be snacking, and kind of, that it's, I just think food is such a an interesting site of so many of those kind of contradictions that we live with.
And there's also kind of connections, I suppose, with kind of desire and appetite as well, isn't there? Which again might be, read in a kind of gendered way. And also just the idea of the snack being, I suppose, a sort of small thing, which I think is also kind of interesting, given, the pamphlet itself as a form is a relatively small publication. And yet, as people will find when they read or hear you read from it, there is extraordinary amount of kind of range in the pamphlet. In its what 28 pages, and just the territory that you cover is quite startling, actually. So it sort of gives a lie to the idea that the snack being a little thing, or the pamphlet being a little thing. So that actually snack allows you to talk about lots of different things.
The pamphlet is to a collection in a way like what a snack is to a meal. So I think there's a kind of, I mean, partly I thought it's like therefore kind of cute and like a little bit tongue in cheek, but I think there's also something about kind of, it is pretty wide ranging, as you said, and I think there's maybe a sort of performance there or a joke there about sort of the way in which is like people who were socialized as women, we tend to kind of, make ourselves smaller and be like, to present this thing as like, oh, it's just a small thing, it's a cute small little thing, when actually it is kind of talking a lot about a lot of big serious stuff.
Yes, absolutely. And actually, we'll get to that in a sec when you read the snack poem. And also, I suppose there's also nowadays, that's kind of says the snacks are often ultra processed kind of things, aren't they? Which again, has these implications for kind of thinking about health and thinking about image, body image as well, I suppose. But hopefully, you don't feel like you've been ultra processed in the process of putting this pamphlet together.
Absolutely
Yeah,
not.
good. Could you possibly read the snack, and then we can talk a bit about it?
Yeah, sure. I don't think I've read this aloud to anyone before. I often read stuff aloud when I'm writing it. The snack. Halfway through making him a snack, Grandma changed her mind and turned the knife on him, my dad, that small boy running down the garden path. No, probably there was no garden. Boy running straight into the street. Terraces crowded like bad teeth. Drunks lying on the doorsteps, waiting for wives to take them in with the milk. Or was it in Southend? They were always moving. Small boy running past the crouched beach huts, the rotting nets, running on through the years into this day of her death, where he's beating the shit out of the hospital vending machine, trying to dislodge a Twix to feed me from its coil, unyielding. She's raising the knife in the dark 1970s kitchen. Wallpaper fever orange. No, 60s it would have been. queasy green formica boy in school shorts running past dad's crushing cigarettes on the pier's rusted girders. Small boy running out into the salt marshes, sinking through the clinging silt, down and down into this room where I'm trying to run, and he's blocking the door with the bulk of himself, where he's 6'4". She's raising the knife and he's running with the plate, balancing the apple slices, the white bread with margarine. There he goes along the shore, tangle of steel beneath cracked boards, faded posters for summer shows. Or was it summer then? Bright posters, fat gulls, blackened bones of the pavilion. No, it would have been before the fire. White bones of the pavilion, loose slats splintering his boy feet, past horses grinning on the carousel, coins layered like slate in the slot machines. Further and further past the great fire in years to come, past the £5 million restoration after his time, with a buoy leap crashing through the black eel-muscled water. Out into a future where, long dead, he passes me the plate and I throw it at the wall. Streak of margarine on the Farrow ball. Child I'll never have screaming. Husband I'll never have screaming. Enough. Enough. It stops here.
I guess I'm sort of surprised you haven't read that one out loud before, because I just think this is such an extraordinary bit of work, and it sort of has this kind of central place, I guess, in the pamphlet, which is why you chose for us to talk about it. But it really has such energy and kind of dynamism, and maybe it's because of the length, maybe that's part of it. It's quite, I suppose it's quite a long one to read out, but there's so much extraordinary detail. So one of the remarkable things is the small boy running. Who runs through the poem, and obviously as your eyes go to get down the page, he's sort of running down the page, I suppose, as well. Through time, history, what kind? Can you talk a little bit about what kinds of things the boy is running from?
From trauma, I guess, from that that incident is one that did happen in my family and has been kind of, something I think that has stuck with like my or everyone in my family who was there and who came after as well. And I think that I guess we all kind of spend our adult lives in a way like running from the stuff that happened to us when we were kids, in different ways. And that sort of is a real tragedy in a way, because probably what would actually allow us to escape it would be to, stop running and turn and face it and deal with it. But like, of course there's all sorts of reasons why maybe we don't have time or energy to do that. And I think, yeah, that sort of that sense as well of kind of trying to run away from like your background, or we do that a lot and it's not generally like possible.
One of the great things about it is you kind of paint in the spaces where that boy has been so clearly. So whether it is the kitchen, or whether it's particularly, I think really, really powerfully actually running along the shoreline, and those references to all those people who he goes past, and the pier and those kinds of things. So we really get a sense of that, the trauma persisting, I suppose, over time and over all these different places that the boy has inhabited. And bringing it right through to the present as well. And there is that really fascinating kind of tension in the poem between that sort of movement and that running forwards, and then this constant kind of going back on itself, so that constant kind of correcting of the story. No, it wasn't, there wasn't a garden, or no, that wasn't how it would have been, or this isn't the particular moment where that happened, or that's not where they were, those kinds of things. So the kind of restarting, retractions. What does that tension represent? I mean, do you ever feel that that tension is somehow resolve, that kind of movement, form, that kind of momentum, or is it always kind of stuck?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, I think in the poem it's definitely stuck, because even in that final moment of kind of it stops here, that's still a moment where there's that kind of, there's a weird scrambling of past and present and future going on, in the kind of, the plate from this scene from the 60s being passed to somebody in the future. And so I'm not sure we're necessarily supposed to believe that. Sort of, it stops here. There's something about the way in which things, traumatic things and memories get retold and get sort of, told through generations and kind of scrambled. These things get the way that I think the poem's about the way that these things get passed on, in the form of like intergenerational trauma. And I think that's it's a hard cycle to break. And then I think that's also echoed in the kind of you mentioned like the landscape of the poem. And I think that there's also something in there, I think, about these kind of the way that that is almost echoed in these seaside towns, which, these kind of working class seaside communities that tend to be quite forgotten, often kind of have sort of regeneration money thrown at them that is all about regenerating like the tourism industry or the pleasure industry. The pier in the poem goes through like, it's kind of a site of like working class community, and then it is regenerated after a fire, but in a way that kind of, doesn't seem to have made any difference necessarily for the communities around it. And then the paint in the final thing, the kind of, this fancy paint. There's something about the sort of throwing of fancy paint, as it were, or of kind of fancy regeneration money at these, deeply wounded families or communities that is just fundamentally a layer of paint, and the kind of work to actually like change anything is much, much more difficult and much deeper, I guess.
Yeah, as a sort of way of kind of covering up things that people don't want to confront or possibly don't want to actually try and solve. That's interesting. That relates back maybe to that question or something you mentioned earlier, which was about the extent to which the boy is sort of running from their background. So is that an issue around class as well? Or is that an issue around a kind of an identity that they want to kind of shed?
I think we are very like weird about class in this country in a way that I maybe didn't realize until I lived abroad for a long time. I think we're uniquely weird about it. And I think that a lot of people do try to maybe sort of outrun their class background, because of sort of external factors telling them that that's sort of what progress means or something. And I think it's like definitely not desirable and to do that. And you're from where you're from, your childhood was like what it was like, and that does kind of propel you forward into adulthood in a certain way. And I think that there are sort of we're so focused sometimes, I think, these days on this idea of sort of like the individual can kind of heal themselves by like, I don't know, meditating or kind of, like going for a walk or taking a bath or burning a scented candle or something. And I think, like, actually, I think, if you come from a background where structurally there was a lot of like external oppression, or where there was, there were like a lot of structural factors that contributed to like some of the traumatic experiences that you might have had as a kid, I kind of think that's that has to be a collective effort to like go back and to heal that stuff. I don't think it can be about sort of, this like personal running away from it or running or moving, moving forward alone. And I think in a way that's what happens in the poem. Like, the anybody who's trying to run is kind of they end up back with family or back in community. Or, back in the landscapes or the places that were important to them.
Yeah, that's really beautifully explained. And that gives it another sense, I suppose, of the kind of, in a way, the sort of density or the kind of range of the poem. And I did want to ask you about the women in the poem, but sort of, there's the wives waiting to take the drunk men in off the doorsteps. And then, of course, there is the grandmother. How do you think about her role in the poem? Because I mean, we don't necessarily hear about her so much as we do, obviously, about the boy or what happens to the boy. But she's always present because, of course, as you said, that's where the poem comes from.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, it's a poem about my nan, but I think more than being about my nan, it's about the sort of, because I never really knew my nan. Like, she lived near us for a few years that I was like old enough to remember, but she had dementia. So she, I think there's part of that sort of breakdown of memory, I think, is definitely present in the poem, you know, that the way in which people tell stories when they're maybe like at a point in that illness where they have a different relationship with memory. I think that's definitely in there. So I think she's coming through in that way. But I was quite interested in the idea that actually this is a story that I've never heard from her perspective, and I don't know very much about what was going on with her, because nobody did, because she was of a generation where you kind of didn't talk about it, you got on with it. And particularly, I think, like, you know, working class women of that generation had a very sort of like, you don't make a fuss, you get on with things, like, particularly, you know, particularly northern women. That means that it's kind of course it's a story about her, but it's one that has been like refracted through men's tellings of it to me. And I think I was quite interested in the idea that there's an unspoken story in this poem actually, which is what was going on. And I think the title, in a way, being the snack, kind of points to that. You know, the title is about kind of the making of the snack, like points to what was going on in the kitchen. I think I would love to write a version of it someday that's like from her perspective.
This one and quite a lot of the other poems do explore these kind of questions of, I suppose, and this is quite a different poem in that respect, but ideas about resistance. So to the patriarchy, expectations of gender, other kinds of authority. And in that respect, I was really interested in, I mean, you do get it in this poem, but particularly in others as well, that kind of tone that appears through a lot of them, where maybe it's things like the rhyme between wall and pharaoh and ball, which it's kind of hilarious. And there's a lot of humor throughout the whole pamphlet, despite the fact that, you know, you're clearly dealing with very serious material. I say despite the fact, but sometimes it can seem, I suppose, it might be seen to a reader quite jarring that you're kind of dealing with these really, really important, but also sometimes quite viscerally disturbing ideas, and yet they're dealt with in this. I mean, what Claire Shaw, because Claire Shaw's done a really nice endorsement for the pamphlet and describes it as a playful but with a knowing deadpan humour. So that kind of adopting of that voice, what do you think adopting that kind of voice allows you to do that maybe would have been difficult to achieve in other ways? What is it about that kind of tone that is quite could be quite jarring or quite startling to some people?
It's a really interesting question. I mean, I think my first thought is that there's something like fundamentally queer in that for me, I think. And even maybe like fundamentally trans, to kind of like sort of, you know, that kind of, I think like a lot of queer culture, particularly if it's like camp, kind of refuses that like serious jokey binary, and kind of jokes about serious things, like, you know, adopts a sort of camply serious tone when talking about jokey things, kind of scrambles that. And I think that's partly about sort of subverting expectations around sort of what is the sort of thing that you are allowed to or should be joking about and what isn't. And there's a kind of irreverence there. But I think also a kind of disruption of the. I think I'm very interested in like the idea that you can ever sort of like express something cleanly or tell a true story, or like, you know, I'm very suspicious of that. And I think I'm very suspicious of kind of, I don't want to allow people to read anything that I write in one way. Or in what, you know, I think if you have the apex of what is fundamentally a very serious poem about like an incident of somebody being abused by a parent as a child, and the kind of, you know, the impact of that throughout the generations, I think it's hard for me to imagine like a serious poem. A fully serious poem about that that doesn't use any like sort of disruptively humorous or surprising techniques, because I think I would also I feel like that would almost make it too much about like, here's me, here's my diary entry. And I think that there's something about humor that can kind of like, it disrupts that sort of purely confessional mode and kind of suddenly we're not just like doing the story, we're also like disrupting expectations around what the story should be, or what kind of tone we should be talking about this in, or what, you know, and that, like, I think, rather than like detracting away from the seriousness or making light of something that is, of course, very serious, I think for me that sort of serves to like connect the poem to like discourse. And like how we talk, you know, it gets the reader thinking about how do we talk about things? What are our sort of expectations for how we talk about things? And that I think broadens it.
Yeah, absolutely. It sort of reframes it, doesn't it? Because I mean, some of the things I suppose appear in poems. You might think, well, okay, I can understand where this is coming from. But if you take it into a different kind of register, I suppose, and you kind of queer the narrative or you queer the aesthetic of it, then you would make people look at it fresh or look at it completely differently. Take a different kind of angle, isn't it? So I'm just thinking about some of the other poems which are in the pamphlet, which sort of do that as well. And it's in a way what you, I guess what you're talking about there is that sense of complexity as well, isn't it? If you don't want somebody to read it in a particular way, you have to think about when you're reading it, maybe what are the alternative ways of reading this, or how might we think about the characters in these poems slightly differently? So things like the Adult Braces poem, for example, where we might think, okay, well, this is a clearly set up between somebody who appears to be manipulated and the manipulator, but actually maybe there are ways in which the person being manipulated is doing the manipulation, or maybe in which they're getting something from this kind of relationship. So I guess there's that poem, but maybe there's some other poems as well which allow you to or encourage the reader to kind of think about the situation in a multiples of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think Adult Braces is a really good example because it's like, I think it's probably the one that's most sort of consistently in that tone throughout. Like, it has a very sort of like arch, tongue-in-cheek tone, but it's kind of one of the most unsettling poems in the pamphlet, I think. It's like quite, I even when I look at it sometimes, I'm a bit like, that's a bit like, am I okay? Like, you know, so there's something really sort of like menacing and unsettling about it. And so I think it's sort of, and I think maybe what's like, what creates that, there is the sort of humor like serves in that poem, I think, to create this sort of sense of dissociation. And I think that poem definitely is about like, a time in my life where I was like performing femininity in a way that was like not sustainable for me. And I think it can also be, yeah, I think when I said earlier, like, you know, it's fundamentally queer, but is it maybe fundamentally trans? I don't think it's like necessarily like when I find myself reaching for it when I'm like trying to express trans experience, it's not necessarily when I'm trying to express like trans joy, but I think like when I'm trying to talk about sort of the years of my life where I was just trying to perform like a gender that was kind of, you know, and the performance was destroying me. I think it's, I find it quite helpful there to create this kind of sense of distancing and doubling and kind of, you know, nothing is quite what it seems and everything has sort of two or more sort of ways of looking at it and stuff. And I think maybe that's what I meant when I said it's sort of a, you know, it's a, there's something fundamentally trans about that register.
And it's also, I think maybe that poem, maybe other poems, kind of inviting the reader in to think about different ways of identifying, and different kind of identities, and kind of broadening out maybe some people's views of the kind of experiences that are being described in there. Because again, with some of them, which also might be sometimes quite taboo experiences, or people don't tend to write about them, then it does offer this kind of multiple ways of kind of thinking about it, reading it, and yeah, I suppose kind of broadening people's worldview as well.
Yeah, and sort of complicating the I, right? The sort of I of the poem and the you of the poem and the kind of, you know, reader versus like speaker who is the poet, kind of, you know, that binary. I'm very interested in like the in the eye of the poem and sort of the like our tendency to read it as the poet speaking, the poet telling a truth, right? And I think I'm not really that interested in like telling my truth. I think I'm more interested in like what it is to tell something, like what a weird act it is to tell, and sort of particularly to like tell on the page to an invisible reader, and sort of, and but not just within poetry, like the kind of, you know, I think like what the going back to the snack, I think part of what that poem about is about on a kind of more meta level is about telling, right? It's sort of what is it to tell, and why do we tell, and what happens when we tell a story and we tell it like over and over, and is it really like possible to tell something that's true, or is the telling almost always sort of like another act or another action? And so yeah, I guess humor for me is like it serves to do that, to make it about sort of almost an investigation of like telling a story, or of you know, or of trying to express yourself or whatever, rather than just a kind of straightforward like here's me expressing my thoughts or feelings.
Well, there are so many compelling kind of narratives, I suppose, in the pamphlet. It's really a really kind of rich experience that people are going to have. So, congratulations. Thank you so much for talking to me about it.
Thank you. Thanks for talking to me.